governments now, including Santa Cruz County and the four cities within Santa Cruz County, Watsonville, Scotts Valley, Capitola, and the city of Santa Cruz, to demand a halt to the smart meter installation program. So essentially the concern is that radio frequency or EMF emissions are responsible for a variety of health impacts. And, you know, we have people are becoming more and more aware that long-term cell phone users are at high risk of getting brain tumors. And, you know, people who are being exposed to these basically what are intense spikes of radiation from smart meters are complaining of headaches, nausea, dizziness. I mean, we're getting reports from all over the state of people getting really sick from these spikes of microwave radiation. It's just a case where these engineers who've been working for PG&E and Silver Spring Networks and GE and Landis and Gear and all these corporations who benefit from smart meters, you know, they're working on a utility system, but they're not considering that, you know, biological systems, including human beings and plants and animals that are around these meters, are potentially affected, and that's what we're seeing. So that's, you know, there's also the privacy issue. PG&E has control over a huge amount of data of what goes on in your house.
They can tell exactly when you turn something on, right?
Yeah, I mean, they, you know, they're getting signals from your home every up to 15 times every minute, and they can tell, you know, when you turn your TV on, what kind of TV it is, what kind of refrigerator you use, when you go away on vacation, whether you get up in the middle of the night.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, I mean, they could say, okay, well, you know, Josh, he gets up in the middle of the night a lot. We're going to take that information and we're going to provide it to a corporation that, you know, pharmaceutical company that produces some sort of antidiuretic drug to market to Josh because he's more likely to buy it because we know he gets up in the middle of the night and turns on the light. So that's the kind of thing that's like, you know, the government and PG&E should not know. You know, they're also using these smart meters to increasingly to bust marijuana growers.
Right.
So, you know, if they can tell the details of your electricity usage, they can tell patterns of, you know, high-intensity lighting.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, that stuff is really, really bad in terms of carbon emissions, and we shouldn't, you know, it can be argued that we shouldn't be growing weed in our closets using, like, coal-fired electricity that is polluting the environment. That's not terribly green, but that's a whole other issue. But anyway, there's a whole lot of problems with the smart meter program. It's really turning into a debacle for PG&E because they have all these organizations lined up against them. You know, you have the Electronic Frontier Foundation in San Francisco, who's fighting them on the privacy stuff. You have, you know, TURN, the Utility Reform Network, who's fighting them on the consumer end of things because people are getting, you know, huge bills when they get these smart meters that were way bigger than what they were getting before. It's a consumer issue as well. And then you have groups like the EMF Safety Network who are pushing for a more coherent and humane strategy on wireless. You know, because right now we are blanketing our communities with Wi-Fi and cell phone towers and, you know, smart meters now and garage door openers, all the wireless stuff. And there's a dark side to that. And people are suffering. People are developing health ailments. And
cancer.
Yeah, cancers, and it's really bad. People need to wake up and give up their cell phone, for one. I mean,
they've proven that this kind of radiation does cause cancer, haven't they? They did for power lines, I believe.
Well, there's a couple issues there. I mean, low intensity radiation from power lines has been associated with childhood leukemia, among other ailments.
Mm-hmm.
In several major peer-reviewed studies, you've got you know, an increasing number of studies showing connections with glioma, brain tumors, where you have long-term cell phone users, you know, who use the cell phone on the left-hand side of their head.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the tumor will grow on the left side of their brain, and you're having guys, you know, who keep their phone in their pocket all the time, and they're developing testicular cancer. Women who keep the cell phone in their bra, and they're getting breast cancer. And so, you know, this has prompted some government response, very sort of mild, tepid response, and of course, full court press by the Cellular Telecommunications Industry Association, the CTIA.
Yeah, they keep it covered up.
You know, it's just like the tobacco scandal. It's just like we've been
told.
Well,
it's, you know, who cares about a little cancer? I mean, it's just more money for the medical industry on the other end.
Absolutely,
you know?
Yeah, and the pharmaceutical industry. I mean, they've calculated that they've got about, you know, maybe 20 years or so before the true scale of the epidemic becomes known. And
yes, because it's particularly children that are affected by this,
that's
correct?
Right, and we're seeing, you know, a new generation of kids growing up on their cell phones, and they're receiving, you know, in some cases, you know, hours and hours of this radiation a day, and they're holding these things to their head, and the government's not doing anything about it, not labeling. The city of San Francisco actually is the first municipal government in the U.S. to require that retailers list the radiation levels on their cell phones at the point of sale. So we're beginning to see like this wakening up. People are like, oh God, maybe all this wireless stuff isn't so great after all, and maybe we should change our policies to protect people.
Mm-hmm. It's so convenient, though. I don't think people are going to give up wireless for their computers.
Well, you know, we gotta weigh the options. I mean, you know, there's a sensible way to use wireless, and there is a really destructive way to use it. And you know, if you do really really need to use a cell phone, you should just keep it away from your body at all times when it's on.
Yeah,
you
absolutely.
Can use a headset. You know, there are sensible ways to go about this, but holding it to your head like that needs to stop. People need to hear that. That's
hard. It's that inverse square law. It drops off rapidly.
It does
with
you're
distance.
Right. You're right.
And you're only having a few inches away, so even though it's a small amount of power, you're really getting hit with it.
You know, and there's all sorts of other studies. Once you start reading about the stuff, there's a study by Henry Lai, L-A-I, from University of Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And he and his fellow researchers up there have found that even very, very low levels of wireless radiation is enough to disrupt and mutate DNA strands.
Mm-hmm.
So that's obviously the first step in cancer development, and that's of great concern. And also, you know, if you want to be really depressed, here's a fact that some combinations of wireless radiation actually can disrupt and have breaches in the blood-brain barrier, which is like the filter, essentially.
No, what do you mean by causes a breach?
Well, like we have a filter in our brain
that
keeps the nasty chemicals that we absorb.
Tends to keep alkaloids out, the water-based stuff, I think.
Yeah, it generally acts to keep out the toxins that we absorb.
Uh-huh.
And so you have a situation where we might be exposed to new levels of chemicals like BPA and, you know, all this other bad stuff. And then we're also exposed to radio frequency emissions that are disrupting our body's natural ability to filter all that bad stuff out.
So it lowers the blood-brain. There's some kind of combination of frequencies that does that.
Yeah, and you know, there's the more you like look into this EMF stuff. I mean, and the thing is, you know, this issue is changing so rapidly. Like 9 months ago, I thought all these people were crazy. I mean, I heard, you know, people talking about the smart meter health threat and how cell phones were dangerous. And I was like, oh, you know, you're just, you know, a bit paranoid, maybe a tinfoil hat weirdo or something, whatever I'd heard. You know what I mean? Like,
there's a stereotype. Tinfoil will block that radiation.
Well, yeah, I mean, we make fun of those people, but, you know, they're the ones that are going to be safer in the end. But what I've discovered, you know, and about 6 months ago, I started reading all these studies because in response to the smart meter coming on our house, I really wanted to figure out what this meant for our health and you know, our animals' health and family who comes to visit, and I started reading all this peer-reviewed science, and it really scared me. It was like, oh my God, this is serious stuff. We need to pay attention to it. And I gave up my cell phone at that point, and in part because it had become too painful to use. Like, I'd hold it up to my head, and my whole ear would like start to burn and feel like it was real pressure in my temple. And to this day, I can't use a cell phone up to my head because it hurts. And I'm hearing like a number of my friends who, you know, started using cell phones heavily about 10 years ago, that they're also experiencing, you know, this kind of stuff. And it's scary. It's like people are becoming sensitized to EMFs, and it's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's Wi-Fi and cafes. And I mean, I you know, I ride the Highway 17 Express, and it's full of Wi-Fi. You know, they've got Wi-Fi sensors,
mm-hmm.
and the Wi-Fi beams are bouncing all around the inside of the bus, and my temple hurts from all these people using cell phones around me and the Wi-Fi, and it's not pleasant. And like, that's public transport. It's supposed to be for public, and you know, we've got a problem there if people
electromagnetic
can't,
pollution, because you don't see it. Most people don't think it exists.
No, I know. That's what's so scary about it. It's invisible. You know, people don't know about the health impacts, or that there's people out there who are electrically sensitive.
It's little understood, the electromagnetic functions in the body and how it affects your, you know, DNA and health, and because we are electromagnetic in our body. So it isn't so much that there's a huge amount of power, it's the interplay of the frequencies that if they're in resonance with ones we already have, it could cause problems for us.
I mean, one example is you know, when you're trying to sleep, your brain sort of tries to settle down into a lower,
goes through the alpha down to the theta and delta,
and if you have certain frequencies around you, apparently they've done studies, and it's the like the Wi-Fi, for example, can keep your brain up at higher levels, so you don't get that deep sleep.
Uh-huh.
So a lot of my friends have turned off their Wi-Fi at night, at least, you know. I mean, we've gotten rid of ours here, but and they found that it they sleep a lot better.
Interesting. You know, I've noticed, because I have a lot of trouble sleeping, and when the power goes out, like in the neighborhood, I can get to sleep really good then, sleep deep.
Yeah,
I thought it might be the little red lights, but it's, yeah, I guess it's
there's something else
the frequencies
that's going on there.
Too, yeah.
You know, I mean, I think there's different writers and theorists who talked about, you know, what this may be, but every, as you said, every single cell in the human body is electromagnetic in nature, and the heart, which is long considered by our sort of mechanistic understanding and simplistic understanding of the human body, has been understood to just be like a mechanical pump, has actually, there's evidence that that it is actually made up of at least 50% neural cells, and that it's sending powerful electromagnetic signals. I mean, we know this, obviously, because doctors take a measurement of that. But, you know, this, you know, every single living cell, plants and animals, all have, you know, we are all electromagnetic beings. And there is, you know, there are writers like Buhner, B-U-H-N-E-R, who have theorized that this sort of electromagnetic pulses are this ancient means of biological organisms talking with each other, essentially, and so that when you have a native community who tells a visiting anthropologist, you know, when they ask, well, how do you know this plant is edible, or how do you know this plant is medicinal, pretty much they all say a very similar thing, which is that the plant tells me, or the plant tells us. And you know, that could be the EMF, the electromagnetic frequency emissions, could be, you know, something of an ancient way of you know, dialogue between species. And I'm not saying that that's the case.
That's how clear it,
but it's an interesting
idea. Carillion photography works. You can see the electromagnetic field of the leaf and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And each you know, organism has a different fingerprint. So
frequencies,
yeah.
That's why the frequencies are so critical. It isn't so much the power as the frequencies interacting with other ones. So let's get back to the other issue here that people are maybe more concerned with, the financial. I mean, with the smart meters, they can overbill you very easily, right?
Well, they are overbilling people, and it's interesting that, you know, all the inaccuracy that's been reported, and it started in the Central Valley in Bakersfield 2 or 3 years ago when they first installed there, and there were, you know, Senate hearings on this, and huge increases in bills. You know, the inaccuracies are only going in one direction, which makes people very suspicious of what people
are doing. I wonder why that is.
Yeah, I wonder, yeah. So there's the inaccuracies, and then there's the hike in the rates that was approved by the Public Utilities Commission.
We have to pay for these smart meters, right?
And we're having to pay for them through our increased cost of gas and electricity. So, I mean, we've been going to a Public Utilities Commission's meeting. You know, they meet in San Francisco on the corner of McAllister and Van Ness. You can go to these meetings every couple of weeks. And essentially what the Public Utilities Commission has become in 2010 California is an appointed body by the corporation. They do not do their job in regulating for human health or safety. And, you know, this is something that not only I've observed when we've been going there to these meetings and asking questions. It's like, not only are they failing to call a halt to the smart meter program, they are failing to get PG&E to disclose the exact frequencies and intensities of the pulses that are coming out. And this has been confirmed, you know, by internal agencies within the CPUC. People are very, very frustrated. You know, Schwartz is one of these guys, and they're basically doing completely what the utilities want. You know?
So that's the trouble with regulatory agencies. They end up at the pocket of the agency they're regulating. It's classic.
Yeah.
It only worked for maybe the first year, and after that, bribery and corruption rules.
And, you know, Ellen Marks, whose husband is dying of a brain tumor from his cell phone usage, she's been a big advocate, a big activist, and she was one of the key activists behind the San Francisco Right to Know law that was passed in June. You know, she says, mm-hmm. you know, who's regulating whom? And she's basically asserting that the industry is regulating government rather than the other way around, which is the way it should be.
Yeah, these things can't be trusted to government. We'll have to get the anarchists to do it.
I think that's a really good idea. I think they do a lot better job, to be honest.
They certainly are doing a better job on the New Year's parade, which should be coming up.
Is that happening?
Oh, I'm sure, but remember, Westmo got a ticket for walking in it, so it is, you know, an infraction.
I think he can get a ticket for
he's the only one that got a ticket.
And watch out. Watch out, free radio.
So Santa Cruz may decide to stop selectively enforcing the laws and arrest everyone who marches in that parade.
Oh,
that'll
boy.
Be coming up on New Year's Eve.
Look out, people. DIY is against the law now, so...
Don't bring your cell phones.
Yeah.
So we were talking earlier before the show that you've only been back in town. You lived here before, but only in a couple months, and you've already been very effective up in Scotts Valley with the, I guess it was city council up there or something on this issue?
Well, what happened was, you know, they tried to install this thing on our house. They got a little note in the mail saying, we're going to install your new smart meter, and it's really exciting, and you can find out about your energy usage. And my girlfriend doesn't use cell phone or Wi-Fi or anything, and she's like, oh, no, you're not, you know? And so we organized a group called the Scotts Valley Neighbors Against Smart Meters, and we went to the council with about 2 or 3 dozen Scotts Valley residents and educated the community and put flyers in, and we got them to be one of the first cities in the state to say, you know, we demand a halt to this program. And then... You know, we went to Capitola and got them to do the same thing the next evening. And then Watsonville went even beyond Capitola and Scotts Valley, and they actually passed a law that banned smart meters. And they'd actually fined PG&E for installing them.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, and then, you know, the county passed an ordinance that is set to expire at the end of this year. Unless they renew it, so people really need to contact their board, their supervisors, and you know, support an extension of that law, because it's really strong to have local governments supporting this. And then, you know, it was clear that PG&E was not respecting any of these laws or any of the wishes of local government. They're just completely just going in and installing against the law, and so it sort of became up to the citizens to enforce the law, and that's what we did. We organized a protest. They were installing from the old Big Trees, Big Creek Lumber Yard in Pleasure Point.
Uh-huh.
And there's videos of this on our website, stopsmartmeters.org, if people are interested. But this
what was that again?
It's stopsmartmeters.org. That's the website.
How do you spell that? How do you spell that?
stopsmartmeters.org.
Okay.
stopsmartmeters.org, one word. And that's in the video section if you want to go see. But we basically held a big demonstration out in front early in the morning. The trucks would normally roll out at about 8 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And we a few of us blocked the trucks. And when the sheriff showed up, you know, he said, "Oh, you got to move out of the way." And we said, "Well, you know, look, these guys are breaking the law. They're going to Watsonville and they're installing against the law. You know, shouldn't you be enforcing the law, you know?"
Mm-hmm.
And
what happened then?
What happened was that PG&E, when it became clear that we weren't going to move, PG&E actually called the sheriff off. And throughout this campaign over the last 6 months, PG&E has not requested that the police arrest us, because having arrests is really a great way to get media attention.
Mm-hmm. Brings it into court,
and
too, where you can...
Yeah, they do not... PG&E, is the last thing they want with this program is to get the public to pay attention to
huge
public health scandal that they're engaged in. They want to keep it hidden away. They don't want anyone to look at it too closely. So, you know, and we've carried on. So we basically, they've sort of suspended installing in Santa Cruz County, although that's no guarantee. They could install at any minute. So people, if they want to protect themselves, need to put a sign on their meter that says no smart meters. They need to call PG&E and demand to be put on the defer list. And you know, more importantly, they need to meet their neighbors and talk about this and look out for these Wellington trucks and get in their way if you see them. Just make it impossible for them to do their job because, you know, that's what's going to eventually stop this. And, you know, we shut down. I ran into you, met you this afternoon, of course, when we were shutting down the Capitola PG&E Service Center in the Capitola Mall, and same action.
Really?
Was underway.
They shut down because you were there?
Yeah.
That's awesome, because my friend was going there to, she wanted to pay a bill or something. She goes, why the hell are they closing? Did they really shut it down?
Yeah, no, we sat down in front of the entrance, and they shut it down. They closed their offices. And
that's awesome.
There was another protest in San Rafael today, where about 30 protesters came there after the Board of Supervisors meeting and sat down in front of the front doors of the San Rafael Service Center around about the same time that I met you this afternoon. And so all of this is sort of happening right now because people are really upset about PG&E, a lot of things, but, you know, not only the health issues, but also the fact that they've been spying on us, essentially. They've been following us. They've been tracking our online movements, reading our emails.
Are you talking about people in general or your group?
No, I'm talking about PG&E monitoring our personal emails that we're posting on private lists online.
Yours? How do they monitor it?
One of the senior executive, the senior manager of PG&E's smart meter program for California, his name is Bill Devereaux.
Oh, he pretended to get somebody else to get on your list?
He called himself Ralph, and
he
pretended to be a smart meter activist from Oakland.
I read about this on Indie Bay. You've been posting a lot on Indie Bay about this. Anybody else wants to learn more about it?
Yeah.
Indie Bay,
yeah.
Santa Cruz.
So he was caught because his name was revealed. So we called him out in a press release, and that triggered a Public Utilities Commission investigation. And then on Monday, the PG&E made public a series of emails that were internal to PG&E. So it's basically them discussing us. So PG&E discussing the protesters and the activists and what we were up to.
Uh-huh.
And they referred to us as, you know, the insurgents. and the opposition, and
the,
you know,
insurgents.
They're tracking our movements and moving their trucks around to avoid us because they don't want the publicity again. and one guy, you know, they hired like a spy to spy on us.
Now wait a minute, don't they have to justify this to the ratepayers, this kind of expense?
Well, yeah, I mean, you would think and you would hope, and we're still sort of waiting for the PUC investigation to become public.
Do they have to respond to Freedom of Information Act stuff too?
Well, we're
going
to have to use that to acquire these documents because clearly,
right? They do have to respond to that, right? It's public money.
Yeah, I mean, you would hope, but they have a funny way of sort of, you know, getting in the way of Freedom of Information Act.
Absolutely. Or the local one for this state, whatever it is.
Yeah, but what's interesting is that PG&E released these documents on Monday, and, you know, half of it's blacked out. All their names are blacked out. Major sections of their own internal emails are blacked out. And you know, clearly this investigation is going to unearth some pretty unsavory stuff that's going on within PG&E. About how to undermine us, and they want to get it. They hired this crisis communications PR guy to handle their crisis for them. And I guess he decided that it would be the best thing to do would be to release, you know, these emails, but in a severely edited form.
It sounds like they already are edited.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. And all this is in the last couple months?
The Santa Cruz, the Capitola protest happened in late August. The Board of Supervisors passed their ordinance in early September. We've been fighting this up here in Scotts Valley since June or July.
Are you spearheading this for the whole state? I mean, is anyone else doing this as well?
I'm doing a lot of organizing. I'm the director of Stop Smart Meters, which is this organization that I founded that sort of came out of the Scotts Valley Neighbors Against Smart Meters.
And this is just in 2 months?
This is in 6 months.
6 months, okay.
And
still, nonetheless.
We've become, you know, basically, you know, myself, and then we've got hundreds of supporters and people who are working with us have, you know, brought this to greater attention in the media, and we've been, having protests. And I mean, a lot of this stuff is like, find an issue that you care about and latch onto it, and don't give up. And like, people need to start disobeying a lot more than they are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're sort of brainwashed, I guess you could say, from the time we're really young in school to respect authority, and often that leads us into really bad
mm-hmm.
outcomes. And it's like through the whole smart meter issue, I've risked arrest like half a dozen times, but haven't been arrested, haven't gone to jail because they're terrified of,
as you said, they want to keep this.
Yeah. So there's a little, people you're just your voice and your presence. And not just going along and doing what you're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously civil disobedience has a long, proud history of being effective. And women wouldn't have the right to vote. Black people would still be segregated had
mm-hmm.
people not disobeyed in large numbers. And we're facing obvious major crises in capitalism today with climate change and the proliferation of wireless technology and GMOs and pesticides in agriculture, and on and on and on, and people really need to disobey. And what's great about it is that when other people see you disobeying, they're more likely to consider that for themselves, and it's
mm-hmm.
sort of
joining in the bandwagon.
And so when I was over in England, I was over there for 3 years. I got my master's degree in transportation planning in Bristol, and met a bunch of really cool activists in Bristol, and got involved in the Camp for Climate Action. And we shut down a big part of Heathrow Airport to protest the expansion of the third runway there,
mm-hmm.
and attempted to shut down a big coal-fired power station. And it's just really empowering to see how regular people working together can make change and really build a better world. So that's what inspired me, at least.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's unusual to win too on the left. Usually, they've got much more resources. So I think you've hit on a good issue that fire people up, and you're experienced in tactics as well.
You know what's interesting though, and I'm glad you sort of brought this up, the whole political spectrum thing, is that the smart meter fight has not been a traditional left issue. It's really been sort of a uniter, because we've had the Tea Party actually play a major part,
mm-hmm.
and most people cringe when they hear the Tea Party, but individual activists, individual people are really concerned about this from a number of different political perspectives. And
mm-hmm.
The libertarians, for example, in Scotts Valley played a huge role in putting pressure on the city council, who are all Republican.
Interesting.
They, this is a property rights issue. You as a property owner, you have a right to or so the thinking goes, you have a right to control what happens on your property. And a big corporation like PG&E coming and saying, you have to have this wireless smart meter on your house, and there's
mm-hmm.
no opting out, and you have to have this. It riled a lot of people.
Yeah, they don't like
raised
that.
Their hackles. So. I almost hate to say it, because I've always sort of had a revulsion of the Tea Party because of its association with Sarah Palin, but there's a lot of good people out involved in different, traditionally different political areas than I was certainly brought up in. And the smart meter campaign has been really bridging these gaps and been really exciting, because you see, like, the Sonoma County Republicans are there shoulder to shoulder and developing friendships and mutual respect for the viewpoints of groups like the EMF Safety Network and environmental groups. And that's really exciting.
I mean, that's how you do it. You're putting a coalition together, essentially, with people that you normally wouldn't even talk to, right?
Right.
I mean, I think that is the way to get things done politically against a powerful...
Oh, totally. And I think the underlying theme is that people can relate to on the right, on the left, in the middle, up or down, is that corporations have way too much control
mm-hmm.
over our lives. And,
yeah.
And that the health and safety of people and animals and plants and nature and wildlife are being sacrificed for short-term corporate profit. And that is something that, middle class, lower class, you know, some people in the upper class can relate to. And you know, I think that's something that we saw happen in Seattle in 1999, where all these groups came together, and you saw this, like, wow, it's like we can actually, we're way more powerful than, you know, the elite who are basically screwing us all over with their policies.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just one of them. I mean, I'm not against, the funny thing is, like, I'm not really against smart meters. I think that they could be good. I mean, people need to be more aware of their energy usage, and they need to monitor their energy consumption, and we need to reduce our fossil fuel usage massively. And having a device that can tell you what you're using and how, you know, when you turn off that, on that light, how much energy does it use, that's a really good idea. But the thing is, they got all trigger happy. They got all, like, you know, all these
hubris.
Executives were like, you know,
we can do whatever we want.
Yeah, they're like,
we're
they're
rich.
like we can add on wireless, and then we can expand into Wi-Fi and broadband, and then we can track all their energy usage, and we can sell it in packets to other corporations. And like, they got all dizzy with this sort of idea that they could use this opportunity of installing smart meters and to achieve so much of their aims, and they didn't consult with anyone. They didn't ask anyone. Even local governments and like county governments weren't even informed that this was coming. And all of a sudden, the county government leaders are like, "Oh, you're installing all these new antenna all around our communities, and you didn't even get a permit for that. And actually, you're violating these franchise agreements that we've had." You know, hold on a second. Who's the government here? Is it PG&E or our elected officials? And so, you know, they just try to go too far, and this is what's happening. It's a big blowback.
Oh yeah,
and
it's a nightmare for them now.
It's a nightmare. It's a complete.
They don't want to have to deal with each individual locality. They want to get like a state. That's the thing is, they weren't expecting any opposition, probably, so they weren't prepared for it. And now they have some opposition. They're going to go back to the drawing board and probably come up with something to defeat you. But right now, you're winning.
Well, you know, we'll see. I mean, you know, PG&E said that they're going to have a compromise. You know. We bottom line is that if this radio frequency, if this radiation that's essentially like microwave radiation, is hurting people, and there's tons of studies that show that, hey, yeah, it is, we shouldn't be exposing people to it, and that's sort of the underlying thing. And what's really, you know, it's alarming that PG&E is installing all these meters, but the silver lining to that sort of nightmare is that you know, we have an opportunity to educate people. People are waking up faster than they ever have woken up before about this issue, and it doesn't stop at smart meters. I mean, you know, it's everything. It's cell phones,
cell phones.
It's Wi-Fi, and
that's probably why they didn't think they'd have any problem, because this stuff is already all around us.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they went a bit too far. They said they thought that, oh well, everyone uses it anyway. You know, everyone has a cell phone, everyone uses Wi-Fi, but the fact is that not everyone uses cell phones. There's like 5%, which is actually a sizable proportion.
Yeah,
who don't use them. And
I won't buy one.
Yeah, and those people have become very angry that PG&E is forcing the smart meters on them and forcing the radiation on them, and very vocal. And that's been, you know, undermining their program. And we have gained some traction in the public and in the media. And it's sort of piggybacking on the whole cell phone health debate as well, and there seems to be a real hotbed of it in
well,
the
that,
area right now.
That's another. Everybody's united on the PG&E, and then the cell phone is a very similar issue that maybe people didn't care about before. But now you already have these organizations going, and the momentum, you can branch off onto that, much like civil rights led to the anti-war movement back in the 60s.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. So there's sort of the synergy going there, and we're certainly gearing up 2011 for a major year of activism around these issues. And if people want to get involved, you know, they should contact us. And there's a lot of opportunities to do different projects and different direct actions and organize different stuff. And there's a real community forming around resistance to these technologies and to climate change and to, you know, abuse of life and all its varied disgusting forms.
Well, people want to do so. They want to stand up and, you know, stop this juggernaut of disaster that just keeps rolling over us. You know, the corporations are they're making a fortune now, but they're screwing us down the road.
Yeah, I mean, we just have to actually stand up and get in their way and not go along with it. And a lot of people are getting depressed because of climate change and stuff. And I've certainly been there. I mean,
that's kind of a given at this point.
Yeah,
it's
really
too late.
Depressing. It's terrible. But one way to get over that is to become active and to turn that that, you know, despair around into action and to really, you know, put your body and your voice and your on the line, and that's how social change happens, and amongst friends and little ripples that go out, you know. So that's what we're trying to do. And
you know, I really like the way you're bringing in the right, the more wealthier people into the cause. I think that's what needs to happen. A lot of, you know, in Santa Cruz, there's a lot of causes, but there isn't really a lot of unity.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, almost everybody in a single cause also has their own version of how they're best to go about it. And the demographics of this area have changed. You used to live here and then moved back. You said you worked with Micah Posner of People Power before. The demographics have changed here. It's a lot more expensive to live here now, so we have a lot richer people living here. So if you want to do any kind of public-based change, you're going to have to reach out to that segment of the population as well.
Yeah. I mean, living in England for 3 years, like, it's you know, these are both class-based societies, and even though we sort of are in denial in this country that class even exists, like
the rich would like us not to look at
exactly.
that issue at all.
I mean, in England, you can hear what someone's class is, supposed class
by their accent,
how they talk, and that's, you know, I mean, that's a huge barrier. I mean, basically learning how to speak the language from the populations that you're dealing with and that you're working with is hugely important, you know, because otherwise you come off as not someone that they can relate to. And so, yeah, but I do encourage people to go to stopsmartmeters.org and watch. We've got a ton of video coverage and analysis and you know, we have links you can follow, do more research.
You got any more tips on tactics for, you've done other organizing, like I said, you've been very effective in this one. I noticed you were wearing a suit at the protest. Don't often see protesters in suits.
Yeah, that's, I don't know if you've heard of the Yes Men.
Yeah,
but,
I like that.
You know, they're able to get into a lot of different situations, corporate conferences and things, by wearing a suit and blending in. And you know, I was a psych major at UCSC, and one thing that we learned is that, you know, in social psychology experiments, If a person is wearing a suit or dressed up in business attire, people are more likely to believe what they say.
Absolutely.
And treat them as an authority. And so, and also PG&E was probably less likely to arrest a guy in a suit and an old granny sitting in front of the service center today.
You're less scary. I know when I used to sell vitamins, they required wearing a tie, and I would sell, the people would believe me when I had the tie on, not so when I had the tie off.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's weird.
How,
yeah.
These are just like little shortcuts that our brain uses, because there's so much information, and we have to...
Yeah, that's what it is. It's a shortcut.
So you have to, you know, you just look the part, and that's something I learned from my ex-girlfriend, Deb Hubsmith, who started the Marin County Bike Coalition. And cycling has been a huge part of my activism, and actually, I think becoming a you know, someone who rides a bike really, really introduced me to activism, because I was like,
you get radicalized. Because
everybody's
flipping you off and stuff.
And I mean, I don't blame the drivers, but like the fact that we have, you know, tens of thousands of cars in Santa Cruz in this beautiful coastal location, it's really sad. Like we it could be so much better if everyone rode a bike, and that's not to denigrate parents who need to drive cars. And because, I mean, they're afraid for their kids' safety, you know? I mean, it's a whole other issue. But
Well, I mean, we could theoretically ban cars. That would solve a lot of our congestion
problems.
Well,
if we just agreed on a certain day that, you know, we could...
There you go. Ban driving is only on odd days, you know?
Yeah, then everyone could be, you know, feel safer than... anyway, I when I lived in Santa Cruz 10 years ago, we worked with People Power and tried to get the rail trail, you know, because
they're still working on that.
Sorry?
They're still working on that.
I know. And, you know, it's even worse, the transit, like, between Santa Cruz and Monterey. You'd think that there would be, like, you know, if not a train, at least some sort of direct bus. And you have to take, like, three different buses, and they don't even connect with each other. And, you know, this region just needs to get it together. It's, like, it's pretty sad that we still don't have that, and that the transit is going downhill,
and then you sit forever on the freeway. You know?
Yeah, but there's money to widen the freeway, but not for a transit system. So that's a bit strange. But yeah, I think people just need to, you know, we all need to organize and to fight this stuff. And
when I hear organize, you know, there's one meaning in that. But I always think the first step to organizing is recruiting. How do you recruit people to your cause?
Well,
How did it start? I mean, you started it essentially, right?
I started StopSmartMeters.org, yeah, and we've got a lot of people involved.
How did you first start? Did you just go to your friends?
Yeah, I think friends, and then, you know, my girlfriend and I really put in a lot of time pounding the pavements in Scotts Valley. We literally
door to door.
We literally went door to door. We talked to people at the farmers market. We, you know, handed out flyers. You know, you don't get discouraged when someone says, "Oh, you're crazy. You know, you're full of shit." You just keep on going, and you know, you sort of you get write letters to the editor and media. You just increase awareness, and then people who are already activists will see, oh my God, this is an issue I need to.
They'll seek you out, right?
They
hear about you.
Yeah, exactly. And
that happened with Peace Camp here over the summer. There was a protest.
Okay.
And yeah, we get people coming from Berkeley and down south just because, you know, they heard about it, you know, and they want to be where the action is.
I mean, it's fantastic stuff going on. I mean, the Santa Cruz bike church and
oh yeah, it's neat down there.
And the hub. I mean, yeah. the anarchist cafe down there. People doing DIY stuff. You know, the parade. I mean, there's so much good energy in this community, and so much understanding, and so many people that are taking direct action, like the good kind of direct action, the thing. We're not just going to wait around for the government institutions to fix this. We're going to go up and we're going to build this from the bottom
up.
Yeah,
most of those were anarchist groups, so they like to.
Fantastic! It's so great, and it's so sad that anarchists have this, you know, bad rap in the mainstream view.
Well, they lost the propaganda battle on their name.
Right. Yeah, anarchy. Yeah, but
they could always change it to self-governing. That's just. But I'm not even sure if all of them even believe in any kind of governing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think what's happening is really, really exciting. You know, with people reclaiming abandoned, you know, vacant lots for growing food and like up in San Francisco. I don't know if you've been to the.
I never get out of town.
Okay, well, next time you go to San Francisco, or if any of your listeners do, you should go to the Hayes Valley Farm because there's amazing stuff happening. This is just old freeway land. It's basically near the intersections of Oak and Fell and Octavia, down in Hayes Valley, and there's just like acres and acres, and they're just people, you know, thousands of volunteers are just reclaiming this formerly like freeway wasteland, and growing food and making this garden and it's just,
diggers,
sorry,
the diggers.
Yeah, it's just incredible. It's just, I mean, it's you know, people are like, forget it. We're not going to wait around. Like, we don't have time. We got to start doing it now. And that's fantastic. That just needs to spread. And, you know, people need to do more of that and ride their bikes. And
so you haven't had any problems with the police here because PG&E isn't pushing it, but you've been involved in other demonstrations. What happens when you're doing direct action and the cops come and you get arrested?
Well, I think, you know, I think a lot of people are, you know, more afraid than they need to be about being arrested. I don't want to, you know, minimize the damage that police can do or the brutality that has happened in the past and will continue to happen. And you need to be really aware of that. But, you know, in terms of peaceful protests, like blockades, like sit-downs, stuff like that, you know, if the media is there and you handle the press right, and getting press training is really a big part. The media training is really a big part.
Ah, some more tactics. You've been holding them out. So
yeah,
what do you mean by press training?
Well, a lot of people think that when you're talking to the press, you just have to answer their questions, and it's like a normal interview. It's like you have a question, and then you answer them.
That's not the question. The real question is.
The real opportunity in speaking to the media is to move your message, and that's what a lot of activists kind of screw up on. They just end up in a conversation with a reporter.
Yeah, I think that needs to be planned out ahead of time. I think that we missed an opportunity at Peace Camp to get. We could have got our message out better there had there been more planning.
Well, it's just whatever is asked of you. I mean, you want to get your message across, and that is, you know, in this case that smart meters are causing a health problem, and we need to have a moratorium on the installation, and we need to have health.
So you had a simple concept that was easy.
Yeah, a soundbite. It has to be really simple.
Yeah, it has to be concise and something catchy or whatever. Soundbite.
So that's another, you know, another piece of advice. But you know, I mean, in terms of getting arrested, there's several different charges that activists often face. I mean, one is trespassing, and that's section 603. It's a misdemeanor.
603.
I think it's 603.
They had to use 647E against the Peace Campers lodging because
okay.
there was no county.
Okay. Well, another campaign I've been involved in is to get a separated bike way in San Francisco on Fell Street, and there's a big ARCO station which is owned by BP, and cars lining up out of that gas station have obstructed a bike lane.
Mm-hmm.
And a bunch of us started a group called Fix Fell, which you can find online. It's fixfell.wordpress.com.
Now, here's another activist, just something you saw in your neighborhood one day. Were you pioneering this or someone else?
Fix Fell?
Yeah.
I started it with a group of other people. But
so you got together with some neighbors. You went door to door with your neighbors?
This was slightly different because these were we organized. We were just so fed up after the BP spill. Then a lot of people were obviously...
Oh, so the people were already charged to the petroleum issue.
And so we channeled that news story into the local transportation...
Interesting.
...issue. And basically connected what's happening globally, global climate change and oil spills, with this particular corporation, BP's, effect locally, which is basically to sever a key crosstown bike route and to... lead to the injury of dozens mm-hmm. of bicyclists. And
well, the gas station was breaking the law, essentially, right?
Yeah, I mean, they weren't. You know, they were allowing their customers to block the bike lane and forcing even kids and grandparents into traffic. And this is the only level crosstown bike route in San Francisco. Something needed to be done. And so a group of us got together, and we held the first protest in June. It was a big party. It was like we shut down two of the entrances.
You had like a block party?
Yeah, it was like a big block party. People got out.
So that's fun. I've been reading Alansky's Rules for Radicals, and that's one of them. Make your protests fun, so people go to it just for the fun of it.
Totally. Like how, dancing, DJs.
Uh-huh.
We got MC Fossil Fool, who is just awesome. He's out of San Francisco, and he builds all these like amazing party bikes with built-in sound systems, and he raps, and he's like, he has this rap, it's about public transportation. He's like, public transportation, moving my body from station to station.
mm-hmm.
He's like, it just makes like the whole issue more fun, because I mean, obviously this stuff can be pretty dreary and depressing.
It helps you get press too if you got something clever.
Yeah. And so people came. We've got 100 people dancing out in the ARCO station, and. And then we had another, every Friday we went out there, so we kept it going. People would stop by, and it was like it created this sort of...
Regular weekly kind of thing.
Yeah, we created this community. And,
interesting.
We got coverage by the New York Times.
National coverage.
Yeah, national coverage. And then we had another event on August 20th in which we called it a big bike spill, and we got all these bike parts from that were in the dumpster from behind the bike shops, and we dumped them literally into the entrances of this ARCO station, and had five of us locked our necks to these bike frames, and it took the police like 4 or 5 hours to drill us out.
Did you get arrested for that?
Sorry, we got arrested for that. Yeah, definitely.
Have you gone to court yet?
They had to call the fire department and drill the U-locks off of.
So you're still to go to court on this, right?
So it just went to court. And the four activists who were locked down got acquitted, and they were
dismissed.
They were being charged with interfering with a business.
Uh-huh.
And they all got acquitted. So the city of San Francisco basically decided to drop all the charges. I mean,
was it like an infraction or something?
Well, I still have an infraction pending, which is just the equivalent of a parking ticket. But I mean, I guess the story to take home is. At least in like liberal Bay Area counties, I can't say that if you go to like Wyoming or something.
We're not including Santa Cruz in that anymore either.
but generally, local DAs are not, they're not willing to prosecute nonviolent civil disobedience.
Yeah.
So that means that if you do have an issue and you want to ramp it up, you're not very likely to go to jail or have a huge.
Well, that's not going to work in Santa Cruz though. I mean, I've been to a few trials. Like West Mode's got, a ticket for infraction for walking in a parade. I mean, they've got the judges locked down here. I mean, there's a couple of them. You can disqualify one judge, but they've got more than one bad judge here. So you're kind of screwed. They will. Like on homeless issues, they prosecute on that. All the peace campers are getting prosecuted pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I've heard. Yeah. I mean, I follow the West Modes trial and things like that. And
mm-hmm.
Sounds pretty crazy. They obviously are threatened, you know, by a movement, and that's what happens. You get a crackdown.
They go after activists in this town, you know, selectively enforce laws against them, I believe, from what I've seen.
Yeah.
Obviously. I mean, if we could get it out of these courts and up into a higher level, but then that costs a fortune, you know, and that's what they're counting on. You don't have the money to do it. And get more people listening to
Free Radio Santa Cruz and Indie Media. And these other,
Well, you want to get a show on? It's only $30 a month if you're broke.
That sounds good, actually.
15. You go to the meetings. You can organize the meetings. You know, it's $10 less.
That sounds good. Maybe I'll have time in the new year.
That is, it does take some time. We have 7 new... disc jockeys these days.
That's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's great. So, there's a lot going on. You know, the smart meter thing is sort of representative of larger, deeper issues that are happening in our society. And I think another lesson to take on from all this is just like that the powers that be know that climate change and green issues are huge. Have huge appeal to the public.
It crosses both sides. You can't bring up unions and, you know, commie stuff these days because there's not enough people to support it.
Right.
But
right.
Like you said, you're bringing in the Tea Party. We had some people on a week ago or two on chemtrails.
Right.
And what the Tea Party is funding the movie they just did.
Yeah. You know, so there's opportunities to
mm-hmm. I think it would be easy to put a coalition between libertarians and anarchists. They're almost the same politically.
Well, that's what I sort of. I don't think it's a spectrum like left and right. I sort of think that it's more of like a continuum,
mm-hmm.
like a big circle, where it sort of meets at the bottom,
mm-hmm.
in some sort of funny, kind of crazy way. I mean, you know, I think that there's opportunities now today more than ever to make these alliances, and I think they're really important. I think if we only end up talking to our friends and people who think like us, it's like, you know.
So you like the alliance. Okay, we were talking about that other one. You started, one you started door-to-door, the other one you started with your friends in the neighborhood, and you had a block party. Was there anything in between the block party? I'm just doing this for anybody that wants to start their own kind of little protest.
I mean,
how would they go from ground zero to a mass movement?
Facebook is really a good... You know, means you can really
use Facebook for both of these.
Yeah. It's a way of getting in new audiences, and I hate Facebook. I think it's mind-numbingly boring, and people just are really, they post like the most mundane things, and
mm-hmm.
if you post anything of substance, there's just silence. But you know, you say, "Oh, my socks keep falling down." You know, people are like, "Oh, wow, mine too," and like there's 18 comments, and it's just like, you know.
Maybe that's the kind of content we should have on Free Radio again.
Yeah. I mean,
my socks just fell down.
My socks are really loose, and it's really, you know. Can we talk about that for a couple of hours? but no, I mean, it's a really good way of getting out the message out. And you just want to think like how people get their media, and then you know, be really controversial and. You know, tell the truth and you know, just don't shirk from being really not annoying, but like afflicting the comfortable and comforting the afflicted or whatever.
You're also very creative.
Yeah, it helps. You know, I mean.
Well, you hit them with a tactic they're not used to, and they can't deal with it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's what we've had to evolve tactics in the smart meter battle. Like, first it was blocking the Wellington trucks, who were the contractor to PG&E. You know,
uh-huh.
So if you see these white trucks, they've got a shell on the back, they say Wellington Energy, you know, get in their way. I mean, I had to block a truck and installer in Marin County on Friday. I actually got in his way and was, like, preventing him from installing the meters.
Interesting.
But
well, what else? You were doing some else as well? You're changing your tactics, you said, as of...
Oh, just the internet and email and just being, you know, I have a couple blogs and that really helps. And I encourage anyone who, even people who don't really consider themselves activists to have a blog. It's just a good thing to write. Like a lot of people don't write enough.
It helps you to think clearer, I think, to write.
Yeah, people have good things to say and everyone does. And, you know, just figuring out what yours is really important, finding your voice. I think.
So you did a lot of writing on Facebook and your blogs, and that helped bring in people.
It does, yeah. I mean, people follow you, and you know, you sort of generate a network that way. And Your friends are there. And,
okay, so you got your core group of a few people, your friends and stuff, and then you reached out to the neighborhood, and then you tabled. How long did you table? Is that time intensive, or?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's just like a few Saturdays at the farmer's market here in Scotts Valley. It's pretty mellow, and they're pretty open to, you know.
So on the weekends, you'd table for how many hours?
Well, we went out there for like 4 hours, a few times in advance of the city council meeting. And really, you know, like watching, like if you're trying to influence an elected body, tracking their election cycles, like when they're up for election.
Uh-huh.
Like one of the big reasons we got Scotts Valley City Council to back the smart meter fight is that we mobilized a lot of neighbors. We wrote a lot of letters into the local press banner. There's a good local independent paper here in Scotts Valley,
mm-hmm.
if you can believe it. And, you know, we made them realize that if they did not join the fight and do what they can to stop the smart meters, that we would, you know, back other candidates and even run for office ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were, you know, they didn't want any opposition, and so and also they probably, you know, listened to a lot of the evidence and realized that these are a problem, and but probably it was more the former.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they ended up voting for the resolutions, and so having that, like, you know, really getting into the head of a politician, they just want to be reelected, and they just want to hold
mm-hmm.
on to power.
Mm-hmm.
And power only gives, you know, as much as it needs to stay in power. So when you have direct action protests and you have people taking to the streets, you know,
it makes them look bad.
It makes them look bad.
They're supposed to keep order anyways. Just the fact you're in the streets
power,
makes
yeah.
them look bad. Yeah.
yeah. So that's what's going on, and I, you know, I should get going, but I really appreciate you having me on the show.
No problem. Glad having you. And we just met this afternoon.
That's awesome. I know. You just came by to pay your PG&E bill and look what, and
and you showed up too. Some of my guests flake, you know.
And I just want to reiterate, you know, for people who've been listening and want to find out more, the online resources are, first of all, stopsmartmeters.org.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find all the videos and details about what you can do to fight this, because the battle's not over. Like, they're gonna try and install big time in Santa Cruz County in February, we've heard.
Like I said, they didn't realize they're gonna have a fight. Now they're going back and planning, and you haven't really seen what they're gonna pull at you yet.
Yeah, I mean, they could come in within 3 days with literally an army of these Wellington installers and have one on every single home in Santa Cruz County before you've even blinked. So
mm-hmm.
if people think this fight is over, then it's really not. And you know, encourage you, email me, you know, go to stopsmartmeters.org. My personal blog is ontheLevelBlog.org. I'm sorry, ontheLevelBlog.com.
Mm-hmm.
And that talks most about transportation issues. And then the website for our campaign up in San Francisco is fixfell.wordpress.com. And, you know, be great to get something going like that in Santa Cruz. There's a lot of problems for cyclists and pedestrians here in town. And, you know, they need to... You have Caltrans who mangled Mission Street since I've been gone, and people are dying, you know, for,
mm-hmm.
for their mistakes. And
well, I hope you get active on some more issues, too. I just like to see revolution.
Yeah, well, you know, there's lots of reasons to revolt these
uh-huh.
days. So,
and you've been very successful. That's unusual.
Well, somewhat. You know, we'll be successful when we, you know,
that's the other thing. It appears success, but you know, they're not going to sleep. You know,
yeah.
If you
yeah,
guys can move on to your next issue,
toes.
PG&E will, you know, maybe wait and come in then or something. Unless you bind them. Are you doing anything legally to lock them up?
Say
injunctions or lawsuits.
There are. I mean, there are a number of lawsuits pending. You know, to obtain injunctions, and certainly, you know, donations are needed to hire lawyers. It's very difficult to find lawyers who take some money.
Actually, lawyers are needed to donate their time.
People are, donate their time, donate their volunteering. You know, we send out a monthly email update, and so if people want to receive that from stopsmartmeters.org, they can email me. You know, we've raised a little bit of money from people who are concerned about this issue.
You got to buy those suits.
Yeah. Hey, man, that was $10 at the Goodwill.
Well, that's a $10 donation.
That's right. It's something. So, yeah. But so yeah, we really encourage people to get involved and just to start their own thing, and you know, don't wait around for someone else to
yeah, and don't be afraid to get out there and start doing something. You know, you might consider doing a class at the Free School on political activism or something.
Yeah, I've been thinking about doing something like that, or taking some of their great classes. And I was involved in the Free School in Marin County, in West Marin and Point Reyes. They have a great Free School that's just started up. And, you know, that I've been teaching adults how to ride bikes, people who've never learned how to ride a bike before, for whatever reason. You know, that's what I've been offering, so... maybe do something like that in Santa Cruz too, because people are really embarrassed about it. Like, I never really learned how to ride. And, you know, it's like not knowing how to swim or how to like run or something. It's.
Yeah, I believe it's way too dangerous to ride bikes in Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
The streets are too narrow. There's too much traffic. I mean, I used to ride. Like I said, I went for a couple of years where I wouldn't even get in a bus. I rode or walked everywhere.
Yeah.
But I moved here and I said, man, this is dangerous.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, there's definitely problems, but I think. One of the things that I teach in San Francisco is a bike ed class, and what you learn as a cyclist is that if you behave, the more you behave like a motor vehicle, a vehicle on the road, the safer that you are. If you are behave more like a pedestrian, you're going to get into problems. So, you know, it's much safer, for example, to take the lane and ride really predictably.
That's right.
Than to ride in the dangerous door zone close to parked cars.
But the other drivers don't realize you have the right to take the lane. They get completely pissed when you do that.
Well, but it's one thing to piss people off and have them honk at you. I'd much rather that than
get killed.
Risking getting killed. And, and I mean, I have pissed off people, but honestly, like, it's just, you know, it's 10 seconds or 20 seconds that they have to wait behind me until there's an opportunity to share the road again. And there's this entitlement thing that goes on, and it's just, you know, what's more important, saving 20 seconds on the road or someone's life, someone's beating heart, you know, someone who has a family and people who love them. And I think anyone who's honest with themselves, you know, I mean, it's crazy what we risk, that we risk other people's lives, particularly the vulnerable road users on our roads, so flippantly, so easily, when the results can be so catastrophic. And so that's, but, you know, I've ridden tens of thousands of miles in tons of different kinds of traffic conditions, and I've followed the vehicular cycling principles, and I've never, knock on wood, got into a collision with a car, you know, and there's been a lot of close calls, but you learn to anticipate the mistakes that other drivers make on the road, and learn to expect them, if you do that, then nothing's going to surprise you, and you're going to be in a position to sort of avoid collision. So I think that there's local classes that are offered in safe bicycle riding. I think that Ecology Action offers them. But if not, it's something that I may start doing in town, or we may get going again. But I encourage people who may not feel comfortable riding in Santa Cruz to take classes and to gain confidence and to ride. And it's just such a fantastic tool, the bicycle.
I would still do it.
This is a town the size of Santa Cruz,
and
we're not going to turn this whole nightmare around unless more people start riding, and we need to get fewer, you know, because, I mean, it's a vicious cycle, of course. If you're afraid of cars, and you tend to drive, and you add to the problem, and, you know, so that's about the end of that. So, sounds like you have another caller.
Yeah, and they might want to say something. Let's see. Hello? This is Free Radio. You want to get on the air? Okay. And can you guys, let's see. Can you guys hear me? Caller, are you there?
Yes, I am.
You have a question for our guests, Josh with Smart Meters or bike riding?
Oh, no, I just commented on the biking.
Okay, what, you got a question about biking?
No, I think that I ride a lot. I ride everywhere I go, and I always wear a bright, reflective kind of jacket where drivers can see me, and it's really important to also be kind of not defensive but more aggressive when you're riding. And I totally agree with the speaker that you should not necessarily ride in the middle of the lane, but at least a meter from the curb. so it's just really important to be seen on the road, and of course you have your helmet on, and I've been riding for years, and I've never had serious acne, except when I was stupid, when I did something that was wrong on the road. But beyond that, it's when the drivers see you, you can use it as transportation instead of using a vehicle. You know, why spend money on gas when you can ride a bike?
It's better
totally,
for the environment.
Yeah. Thanks, caller. I mean, I always say that, we should be assertive, not defensive, and you need to be assertive on a bike because our roads are designed for cars these days, and you need to, claim your space, and that means always staying at least 3 to 4 feet away from a parked car because the doors can open, and you're legally entitled to do that.
Door prize.
Yeah, exactly. And,
yeah.
And, we've kind of forgotten that our streets were at one time public spaces where people would meet and talk and chat and socialize and exchange, and now they've got this very cold sort of, very mechanistic transportation function. But for most of human history, our streets have been really social. And when I was in Bristol, I did my research on looking at how levels of motor vehicle traffic can destroy local communities. And literally, you know fewer people on your street if there's more cars on it. And that's scientifically documentable. So more people riding and getting out of that cycle of car dependence is really, really crucial for a lot of movements, because not only are you not contributing to all the bad things that cars contribute to and safety and pollution and things like that, but you're also seeing the world directly and not through glass and metal, and that is really important for a whole host of other understanding issues, seeing the world directly, not through a car.
And you're totally right. You think people driving the cars, they get road rage. They're inside this metal machine that's moving down the road. But when you're biking, you're exercising, your heart is pumping, your brain's getting plenty of oxygen, your whole body's getting oxygen, and it's really healthy. And you don't have road rage when you ride a bike. That's my opinion. I think if you go to YouTube and type in, or Google and type in, what's it called, bike rush hour. Bike rush hour, and it's a video from, I believe, Amsterdam or somewhere in Northern Europe, and it's incredible. It shows all these people on these bikes stopping, waiting for the train to pass, and when the train passes, they continue on the bike. And what's interesting is that almost no one has a bike helmet.
Yeah.
There's like hundreds of people on bikes, and no one has a bike helmet.
And that's what's interesting. I mean, we associate bike safety with bike helmet use in this country. And
they don't really help that much, do they?
Well, what's more important is avoiding collisions in the first place, not just having protection on your head when you actually get
in. Can I get a garment for that?
So, you have in the Netherlands, where you have, rates of bike riding, which is like 60% in some towns, you have virtually no one wearing a helmet, and you have bike injuries and fatalities, which are a fraction of those that we have in America, where everyone uses bike helmets. So there's something else going on there, and really what it is a conception of public space that is different over there, that they really put pedestrians and bicyclists first.
I heard it. I was reading on the net, and there's a town, I think it's in Germany, that they decided to remove all of the street signs and all the street lights and everything. It's a small town, and they discovered that the accident rate dropped dramatically.
Yeah,
people were more conscious when they were driving.
Totally, so it's called shared space, and this whole idea of that we've been using in the West for a long time, which is basically to protect pedestrians and bicyclists from cars, you need to separate them and give them separate space. Instead, that's flipped around with the shared space principle, and you say, well, look, let's have the streets be for people, and then if cars want to operate on them, they can do so, but they are a guest within that space, and so you remove curbs.
Take out that entitlement.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. And so if you get drivers to start engaging with their environment, slowing down, you have eye contact being made, you have people engaging, and you know, I mean, this is not some abstract principle. It happens all the time in this country in parking lots where there's pedestrians and cars just go slow, and that works. You know, it's like, why shouldn't our why shouldn't our cities and towns be like that in general, rather than mostly traffic sewers for cars? And that's like, you know, big question that we need to answer.
Yeah, I mean, where I live, it's there's a lot of people trying to work to eliminate cars completely from the downtown area. I mean, the center of the city.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, I'm calling you from Santiago, Chile, over the internet.
Nice.
Yeah, but there's a lot of bike activists here, but there's a movement to eliminate vehicles in the city center, which would be great because then, you know, people take the metro, they can maybe use the bikes, but
it's quieter.
Trying to change the consciousness as far as drivers versus, you know, people, pedestrians and cyclists. So,
I mean, I think the problem is a lot of decision makers, a lot of politicians really see the world through a windshield, and if you drive everywhere, you're gonna see the world through that prism, and you're gonna make decisions that favor, you know, people who drive cars over people who ride bikes. And obviously, there are people who do all the above at some time. And I think, you know, much of the problem that we face in transportation is dividing people into, you know, these species, like we're born like with a steering wheel attached to our hands or with you know, bike handlebars. And it's like, no, you know, sometimes I need to use a car occasionally, very occasionally these days. I haven't owned a car in 10 years, but my main mode of transportation is my bike, and sometimes I'm going to use the bus, and I want, you know, those modes to work together. And right now we're in a situation where it's totally unbalanced, and there's way too many cars, and it's pretty hellish, you know. But the solution is to you know, individually and collectively get out there and change our habits and create the world we want to see, you know. So awesome that you're calling from Santiago. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I've got Winamp, so I listen to KZSC. I used to live in Santa Cruz, so I still tune into radio.
So it makes you feel at home.
Yeah.
Nice.
For sure, but with Gmail, you can call the states for free, so it's fantastic.
Great. We have more listeners outside Santa Cruz than inside, actually.
Yeah. All right, well, thank you so much for the talk.
All right, thanks for calling.
All right, take care. Thank you.
Yeah.
So free.
All right. Hello?
Is that the FCC?
That's yeah, I guess that's the sign. It's time for you to go.
All right. Well, awesome, man. Thanks for having me on.
All right. It was great.
And can people listen to this online or if they want to?
Yeah, I'm going to post this.
Great.
I missed the first couple minutes because I'm always forget to turn on the recorder, but we got the bulk of it.
Great. Well, thanks again for having me on. And
I think I have your email, so I'll send you the link.
Sounds good. Yeah, stopsmartmeters.org. My email is there if people want to get a hold of me and get involved.
Yeah, if listeners want to see any of our shows, they're archived at freakradio.org. Just click on archives, and it's under Free the Land, part of Tangerine Dream Team.
Awesome. Well, it's been refreshing being on your show, man.
Yeah, it's great here.
Beats mainstream media any day.
I like hearing from an activist that's going up against the man and winning.
Well, we're getting there. We need help. So if you can help, then the man is big and strong and has lots of resources. So if you can help out in the grassroots effort,
do you
have
meetings?
Sure, be appreciated.
Regular meetings or?
That's not really. It's sort of you know, it's a state group, statewide and regional group. So we do have conference calls and you know, we do organize on the internet, and we'll continue to do so. So if people want to get involved, it'd be great. You know.
Cool.
So thanks again for having me on, man.
All right. Thanks for being on.
All right, Free.
Have
night.
A good one.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is the Free the Land Show on freakradio.org, 101.1 FM.